Josh, I love the intros, but man, that one was, that's last year's intro.
ESPN's number one source for green and gold information.
Oh, hey.
Once again, Rob.
He's cracking the lid.
We did this last time. You have to speak on the show for me to give you an intro.
You know what? You're right.
Our most musically inclined and bald guest.
I feel like a jerk. I really do. Like, that was terrible.
It's Rob Domofsky on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
Always valuable to get the perspective of Rob Domofsky after a Green Bay Packers game, but especially after a Green Bay Packers loss. Good morning, Rob. How are you doing today?
I'm all right, Jen. How are you?
Oh, we're frustrated. We're irritated. We're embarrassed. Feel stupid for saying that this was a Super Bowl team after the second half of the seriously, you know, you sit there and see.
I know.
And I think, to be honest with you, that is what is hanging over my head the most is you see flashes from this team, man. You see them put it all together and you go, holy hell. Wow. They really are something. And then they underperform the way that they did yesterday. And you go, what the heck? So I'll ask you that question, Rob. What the heck?
What the heck? Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know that I've ever seen a game where they don't punt and only score 13 points. That's bizarre. I don't understand the 4th-and-8 play at all. And I'm sure you guys have talked about that ad nauseum. I don't understand.
We actually haven't addressed the 4th-and-8 play all that much. We should talk about that a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean,
you're stupid. There, we addressed it.
Yeah. Good call, Gabe. and then the interception that Jordan Love threw, and his answer was completely convoluted. He essentially said, well, it was just like a punt return. Well, if you punt on first down, yeah, okay, it was first down. I get the idea that you take a deep shot on, you know, third down and throw it 50 yards down the field and it gets picked off. Yeah, sure, it's like a punt return. This was not like that. So there's just so many things that happened yesterday that you shake your head at and you say exactly what you said, Jen. How the heck did we think this was a Super Bowl team? Now, watch, they'll come out next week and steamroll the Eagles and, you know, we'll be back on their side, but it sure doesn't seem like it right now.
Rob, does LaFleur at times, when he should cut it loose, he's too conservative, and when he should be conservative, he cuts it loose?
Yeah, I think you see a little bit of that, Chewy. I also wonder this. Like, we're in, what, year 7 of the Matt LaFleur time? Like, has Matt LaFleur's offense evolved enough to keep defenses off, off their scent? You know, like, we saw the first couple of years, they schemed guys open left and right. I mean, it just, you know, I'm not so sure – I see that now. I mean, there's a lot of tough contested catches, a lot of tight windows. You might know the X's and O's better than I in that situation, but it just doesn't seem like the offense has taken itself to a different level. I don't even see a next level because it was really high, but you can't just tear off the sticker on the folder and change the date and go with the same type of game plan and scheme. So, we saw a little bit of that towards the end of the Mike McCarthy era where, the offense just really didn't evolve at all. And, I wonder if that's possibly what's happening here.
Is part of it too, Rob, because last year they changed the way they ran the football to better accommodate Josh Jacobs. Have they just not been able to adjust to be able to marry what they want to do in the LaFleur system, in that pass game, the way everything kind of marries together with the outside zone scheme of this style of offense with the way that Josh Jacobs runs the football most efficiently?
Yeah, because they're still running it pretty right, or at least yesterday they ran it pretty effectively. I mean, what was Jacobs? Over 5 yards a carry, I think, yesterday. So it's a good point, Gabe. Something's just off, right? Like, I mean, when something's off like that, you can't make mistakes with decisions on going for it. You can't make mistakes on turning the ball over. You can still win if things are a little off kilter, but not when you do the other stuff and then throw in, some injuries. And I want to go back to that 4th-and-8 thing too, Gabe. Like, they at that point, do you know what their skill guys were on the field at that point? It was Malik
So Malik Heath, because he couldn't line up properly, and they had to burn the timeout. Yeah. Savion Williams and Romeo Doubs.
Correct.
And then was Musgrave the tight end?
No, it was Don Fitzpatrick.
Oh.
And I think Emmanuel Wilson, maybe Jacobs was the back on that. I'm not sure. But, like, that you have to take that into account, right? Like, you have to take into account not only the down distance, time, and score, but who you have there. I think that was another aspect of that mistake.
Does LaFleur have any sort of principles that he lives by in terms of going for it on fourth down? Because the teams that are aggressive and do it all the time, it seems like, just using the Lions, for example, because they're a team in the division that go for fourth down more often than not, but it seems like they have a plan of, hey, if it's fourth down in this part of the field, this distance, we're going to go for it. Does LaFleur have any of that? Because it just feels like he's flipping a coin in his mind whether or not he's going to go for it or not.
Yeah, he has said many times when we've asked him about that stuff that he goes by his gut. It's a gut decision. So clearly the answer would be no. He does not have a specific set of guidelines. You know, I mean, it's, you know, if he were a basketball coach, would he always foul up three with under 10 seconds to go? You know, it sure doesn't seem like that's the way they operate.
So is there anybody on the staff that maybe can suggest that his gut instinct is very similar to that of George Costanza's, and maybe when he has that gut instinct, he should go with the opposite?
If he normally orders tuna salad on toast, he should order chicken salad on toast.
Rob, is he a micromanager? Does he let his assistant? Because there hasn't been an offensive assistant that has gotten a sniff outside of Hackett, who we all know about. For a head coaching job, Mike would lean so heavily on Andy Reid, Mooch, even Marty, because the two coached together for so long.
Right.
To me, is it my way or the highway, and I don't really want to – or does he – you think he consults with – I don't know what kind of coach Stenovich is.
Yeah. No, it's a good question. Stenovich did get some interviews, right? He had he interviewed for the Bears job, if I'm not mistaken, and also interviewed for some play calling coordinator positions, but you're right. I mean, for a team that wins a lot, their guys aren't getting hired, but the same thing's happening on the scouting side too. Chewy, John Eric Sullivan's like the only scout that's gotten any GM interviews, and they've got a lot of guys up in that front office, Milton Hendrickson, John Wojciechowski, Matt Malaspina, and then John Eric Sullivan. Like, I mean, back in the day, those guys were all getting, Reggie
Snyder. McKenzie.
I wonder if the rest of the league doesn't look at these guys as sort of a trend-setting group. I hadn't thought of it that way, but you may be onto something there.
Rob, September 22nd, 2025, a gentleman by the name of Rob Domofsky wrote an article for ESPN.com that said, why Packers' offensive struggles could be long-term concern. I don't want to say, but how concerned should we be about the offensive line specifically, who did not have a good day yesterday? And I'm concerned that the health issues there and the penalty issues there are going to plague them for the long haul.
Yeah, there's something missing up front. I really think, Jen, we started to see it in the Philly playoff game where they were sort of dominated up front, which is why they ended up, why Goody signed Aaron Banks, in the first place, was, I really believe, because of that game and the way they were pushed around on the up front on the offensive side. And I haven't seen a whole lot of improvement. I still don't know if the Elgton Jenkins move was the right one. I mean, it seems like he's been okay at center, but maybe did you weaken two positions by moving one guy? I'm still not sold on that. And I'm not sold that they're going to stick with Elgton Jenkins long-term if this doesn't get better. So I do think it starts there. It's a cliche, but it definitely does. And maybe I should just, unlike the game planning stuff, I should just change the date on that article and rerun it again, because it sounds like I might've been onto something there. Blind squirrel finds a nut, broken clocks right twice a day, I guess.
Rob, what's your gut tell you on Kraft? And if he is out for the year, you think they'll make a move to get a quality tight end in here?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, I do, Chewy. I think all indications are it's a season ender, ACL from everything I've heard. They were just waiting for the confirmation. The text I got was nothing confirmed yet, but, like, I mean, you know how it is. They know.
Yeah.
Very rarely does does a guy who they think has an ACL tear go into an MRI and it's not an ACL tear, right? So I would be stunned if it's not. This is very minor transaction, but they did cut Ben Sims a couple weeks ago, and then he was claimed by the Vikings, coincidentally. So they lost their fourth tight end, I guess, who would now be their third. I don't know what's out there. I've looked at the cornerback market, and it's pretty scarce. I've not looked at the tight end market, but I don't know if there's anybody out there that they could bring in at this point. And maybe that, I don't even know what the practice squad. There's so many guys who've come and gone. Do they still have Messiah Swinson on the practice squad? I'm not sure. He was with them in camp, but I think he would be the Messiah in name only.
Did I see there was a tweet out there yesterday talking about Njoku, right? And that was like far-fetched.
That seems like a pipe dream.
Yeah, seems like it. I would be stunned if they parted ways with him.
David Njoku reportedly unlikely to be traded, that according to BleacherReport.com yesterday.
Yeah. I wouldn't trade him even if you're a bad team, you still got to keep good players at some point. You can't just keep starting over.
Rob, why do you think the Packers are not very good in the red zone?
Well, I mean, we can look at it yesterday. I don't know if there's one general reason, but Savion Williams' fumble, that just started the whole thing, right? Like, if they go in and score there, maybe the game takes on an entirely different tone and you're not chasing points. Let's say they score there and then Matt LaFleur doesn't have to make the terrible decision on fourth down. Was there a mail cart going there behind you, Gabe? It looks like somebody was delivering the mail behind you.
It looks like a gentleman there is collecting cardboard throughout the market hall. So,
okay. Gotcha. I haven't worked in an office in a long time, so I don't know what happened.
Get distracted.
Squirreled us there, Ross. Good grief.
Like behind me, the market's closed. Sorry. What are we doing?
Sorry.
I actually got concerned that there was somebody just like hanging out behind me.
Sorry, I didn't mean to freak you out. The thing is, like, maybe it must have been in front of you and the reflection was in front. Whatever. Anyway, I do think the Savion Williams fumble started a chain of events that caused them to make bad decisions and bad plays in the red zone, and then it ended up at the 1-for-5 where they were. I mean, they were 70% going into the game. They were in the top. I think they were in the top 10, maybe even top 5 in the league in red zone before yesterday. It was 70% conversion rate if I had read the ESPN stats and information game notes, right? So, it wasn't really a problem until it was a problem. And I do think it just got started bad and got worse.
Rob, we appreciate you hanging out with us. Have a great one, and we'll talk to you again pretty soon.
All right, sounds good, guys. We'll be seeing you.
Good stuff from Rob Domofsky. He joins us each and every Monday. Again. Cut him off.
No, he's looking out for me. I appreciate it.
From the glass, behind the glass.
Look.
What kind of sneak attack are we talking about here?
I don't know. It's dark. It's dark in the market hall.
Joshy, can you save us, please?
Something's come from behind. I want to know.
I'll try my damnedest. Hey, it's been Milwaukee listeners. Josh Moshie here for my friends at One Up Parlay. Favorite daily fantasy sports app with the absolute largest payouts on Parlay. I cashed a little $2 entry for $30 just this weekend. Tonight I'm looking at George Pickens to score a touchdown, Javonte Williams over rushing yards, CeeDee Lamb's over rushing yards, and Marvin Harrison Jr. to have under 58.5 receiving yards. Here's what you should do. Download the Wanna Parlay app, click around it when you decide to upload money to play, and get into the action. Use promo code JGC for a 100% deposit match for up to $250. Download the Wanna Parlay app, use promo code JGC, and let's play the world's richest parlay today. You must be 18 years or older to play. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER today.